7:40 at KLIF right now. I'm Dave Williams with Amy Shadroff. Thank you for joining us. Chris Grolnick is recognized as the nation's leading expert on active shooter events. He's a security consultant for active shooting suppression and prevention. He has testified before Congress on high-profile cases. A former Marine, he's retired from the McKinney Police Department. And full disclosure, although in this case it's bragging, he's a friend of mine. Hey, Chris, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Dave. How are you doing today?
Fine, fine. You draw a distinction between terrorism and active shooter events, and it's one that's a little bit blurry in the media reports of these things. Tell us what the distinction is.
Well, I think it's fairly linear, but sometimes it can go in both directions. Terrorism can mask itself as an active shooter event, and active shooter events can mask themselves as terrorism. That's why some people at higher levels of the political spectrum wait to define terrorism or an event as terrorism, even if it's blatantly obvious, because terrorism is driven by religious, ideological, and political goals, whereas active shooter events are driven by just people who are upset trying to right some perceived wrong. And it's hard to reduce it to simple terms like that, but that's probably the most simplistic explanation to answer your question.
Based on what you know about the Chattanooga incident, do you believe that was a case of domestic terrorism or just an active shooter event?
Oh, no, absolutely. It was a terrorist event. I think we've come to that pretty clearly. We can define that now based on not only his blogs and his purpose and mission-driven. In other words, he targeted specifically military locations. And there's no doubt in my mind. And I think it's difficult to delineate between domestic terrorism versus international terrorism and even active shooter events, because frankly, they're all, you know, some form of terrorism where everybody's terrorized. I guess it's just the motives behind it. And you're absolutely right to call it domestic terrorism because it happened here. It's just, you know, there's a lot of pundits out there that are saying we have to go fight this battle overseas. There's nothing we can do. And there's many policies and politicians that say there's nothing anyone can do, as in we're all just sheep waiting, lambs waiting for the slaughter, or, you know, there's nothing we can do unless there's gun rights. There's nothing we can do unless there's this or that, when the fact of the matter is, you know, prevention is key. Threat detection is key. Statistics show us in 1999, there were 200 embassy attacks across the world for the United States. They put a threat detection prevention program in place. In 2003, there were only 5. So this works.
We're talking with Chris Grolnick. He's an active shooter expert. And Chris, I'm trying to remember back, and I just don't. 1993 is when weapons were first banned at recruiting centers. And I can't remember why, because it just doesn't make sense for military people to not be armed, as they are obviously targets.
Yes, sir, Dave. Actually, I believe it was maybe officially signed, but it was conceived and crafted by George Bush. It was signed by both Bush and Clinton. Now this is just my opinion. I believe it was done in part to appease some concept of, you know, what we would modern day call some form of gun control, which is ridiculous. You know, it's called the armed forces for a reason. And the reason and logic behind it is, if you recall, there was a deal behind the scenes that let the assault weapons ban sunset under George W. If something else was done. And I believe there was some give and take. I'm not 100% certain on that. I'm speculating, but I'm doing a lot of research over the past weekend, especially since my last appearance on TV. That question has come up a lot, and for the life of me, that's the only explanation I can give, and it's a hypothesis.
So if we should find ourselves in the middle of an active shooting event, what can we do to try to stay alive?
What a great question. We teach react, escape, and survive. We try to reduce everything to something simple, like think three things people can take away and remember, at, you know, whether they're on air, listening at home, driving to work or whatever. And that react is, you know, you hear something and you start moving. You want to escape. You want to get out and you want to survive. Think of it like this. You keep hearing about lockdowns. Everybody's in lockdown. Well, if there was a fire at your house, would you have your family locked down and wait for the fire department, or would you get out? a moving target is harder to hit, frankly speaking, than somebody, you know, hiding. And if we reduce ourselves to simply waiting for the first responders, these incidents are over in 7 minutes, and police do not show up historically for 17. So what are you going to do for those 17 minutes until a first responder gets there? Because you are the first responder. And I'm speaking statistically from active shooter aspect, but this applies to all sorts of workplace violence. React, escape, and survive.
Should you try, what if you can't escape for some reason? Should you pretend like you've been shot and sort of play dead?
Okay, so that is a tactic that has worked in the past. It's not one I would recommend, but you can find some hardened cover, and there's a long discussion to be had. What's the difference between concealment and cover? And briefly, concealment hides you, cover protects you. So if you can get in somewhere and lock yourself in and bolt the door and know the shooter or aggressor can't come in, that is one way. But as soon as you hear a break in the action or in whatever, get out. Get, you know your exits before you go somewhere. Know your escape route before you enter. This is not a fear-monger session. This is not a, oh my gosh, I'm going to be, a victim mentality. This is simply a prepared mindset that says, you know what, I'm ready to deal with anything. God forbid something goes wrong. I have an avenue of escape with my family. There's courses that can teach you this. We have free videos on our website, activeshooterexpert.com, and I would urge everyone to take a look at the strategic partners on there, because they are the who's who. When something goes wrong, the government calls these people. I'm humbled to even be in their presence, but and on this call for that matter. Thank you, by the way.
Well, thank you. I wish we had more time, but we'll talk with you again, because this is unfortunately a subject that's not going to go away real quickly. And I would like to also thank you for making your website activeshooterexpert.com rather than CGPGMG.com.
You're welcome, Dave.
What is that? That's the name of the company, though, actually, right?
And it was innocuous on purpose, because that active shooter was a little bit too much in your face during some really bad times in our history. And we were not speaking publicly, because we were not, I refused to let anyone talk about school shootings in the organization. And now, Frank, unfortunately, these incidents are so frequent. We need something that people can remember and get to and watch our videos for free. There's no website tracking, no monitoring, no log on. Just click on it, and it's a good resource, but back it up with some subject matter expert material.
All right. Chris, we're going to pass that along on our own Facebook page, and also we'll tweet it out. Thanks again. Have a great day, Chris. Chris Grolnick, nation's leading expert on active shooter events from right here in McKinney.